The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
There's only one place to start here, Con, and it's me and you today. Connor's not around, and that is the discipline I have here down in Machid. And, like, I mean, I suppose this started breaking on Tuesday, that the Dingle mentor got 8 weeks. So it was the minimum he could have gotten. So that's the disappointing thing, really, for an awful lot of people, is that these things have happened so regularly in the last few months, that, and Down had acted so strongly on their indiscipline between Downpatrick and Ballyholland, that we're kind of hoping that this fella who came off the sideline and hit a player unprovoked, and with the player not really expecting it, that he'd get more than the minimum. So they couldn't give him any less. Now, he's Paul Geaney's uncle, and he managed to carry under 21s 2008. And are these mitigating factors? And, you know, it's hard to know. But you'd imagine that this, he got the minimum penalty under Rule 7.2C, misconduct at games by team officials, any type of physical interference with an opposing player or team official. So that was it. 8 weeks. When you put this into context, it's the same ban as Tony McEntee and Jason Sherlock got during the Galway-Dublin league game in Salt Hill, where the two lads were the water carriers, yeah, the runners, and all those two fellas did was hold lads back and, you know, grab them and keep them out, and they got the same ban. Like, there's no logic to this, you know what I mean? There's just simply no logic. Davy Fitzgerald, who come running onto the field, and to, in fairness to Davy, it was to give out to the referee. Jason Ford came across, said get off it, and they shouldered each other, nothing in it. Now, Davy had no business going on, he knows that,
yeah,
he got the same ban. This is as a mentor who runs on the field and punches a fella into the face. That's wrong, and there's no minimum he should be getting. So he's getting 8 weeks. County finals this Sunday. He's going to miss that. What's left? Unless they have, yeah, a league game or two, you know. Like, I mean, that's the season over. So it's not. It's only a punishment. And in all fairness, is he going to be banned even from training? Like, he'd be at training. All he's going to do is sit in the stand. Could get mic'd up to the manager, anyways.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what's the punishment here? Like,
there's no punishment.
There doesn't look, yeah, to be any.
Kieran McGeaney got 8 weeks for saying something to Joe McQuillan.
Yeah.
We still don't know what was said or whatever, but that was just verbals between him and the linesman.
Yeah.
He got 8 weeks.
But I tweeted about this, that Gordon remember we were talking about Gordon Kelly's and Colm Collins, the, yeah, manager, was complaining about this. He squirted water in the direction of an umpire and he got 3 months. And that was proper punishment, because that happened in the league and he missed the inter-county season because of this. 3 months for squirting water, yeah, while you get 8 weeks as a mentor, someone who has no business getting involved with players, and you're coming on punching them and you're getting 8 weeks. I just can't understand this. Like, I mean, there is another rule that he could have been done under. Well, he could have got more than 8 weeks for starters, because that's minimum. He could have been done under disruptive conduct by players, officials, supporters. Penalties are at the discretion of the committee in charge. So he could have got an awful lot more if they wanted, yeah, to make an example out of it. They didn't make an example out of it. And here we are now again. We've heard nothing from the GAA about this. We've heard nothing from Tom Ryan. Tom Ryan has said nothing since his first media appearance when he got the job. Nothing. Is this not a perfect opportunity for the new Director General to come out and say, this is not good enough, and here is a new measure I'm bringing in, a respect kind of campaign, or Kieran Shannon, I was reading a piece of his yesterday, that players and mentors should be sign up to a spirit of the game clause,
yeah,
where if you step outside the boundaries of this, then you are prohibited from appealing this. You know what I mean? You have to accept the severity of the punishment that's coming your way.
But the annoying thing here is it's not like Kerry were hamstrung by the rules, which has happened so often, you know, yeah, where people can appeal because the rule doesn't actually say anything like that. You know, we all want the Tiernan McCann ban that time, you know, when he dies, but there was no precedent, there was no rules, so it was never going to hold up and he got off of it. But in their own rules, it says, like, there's discretion here if they think it's more severe than it is. And,
yeah,
whatever about him, you know, having been an under-21 manager and Paul Geaney's uncle, like, I don't know if that came into it or not, but Like he hit a hit Darren Moynihan, like a Kerry Minor. He won an All Ireland with Kerry 2 years ago. He's still an under 20. He's not even looking
he's
at the guy who's
only points. A young fella. Yeah,
19, 20. He's come on and points to him from the side. Like, you know, he was just standing outside this brawl, sort of pointing a finger, and you know, and then he just come on and get clocked. Like, so where's the sort of mitigating factors for him? Like, there's no justice for him. And yeah, it's really annoying. Like, Down have tried to come down hard. We know that what'll happen there is, like, that will probably get appealed and they won't be able to hold up those bans for Ballyhaland and Downpatrick, but at least they're trying. And Kieran Shannon's thing is right, like, you know, players maybe should be entering into something like this, or people like Down can say, well, next year if any of you do this, you're being thrown out of the championship, and we can define it by a mentor running on or whatever amount of players get involved, how long it lasts, or if you leave the field in that case, then that's a brawl and you're suspended.
Or any subs come on. Talking to Alan Brogan yesterday, and he was thinking that they should start like the kick racism out in the Premier League. Like, there should be, like, they need to lead from this. The GA, Tom Ryan needs to lead from this. And it's, do you know what it is? It's such an easy PR exercise for them now. Yeah. And we've heard nothing from, because nobody wants this. This is a black stain on the GAA, and everyone's concerned it's going to get worse. And here's Tom Ryan, a new director general. Here's the perfect opportunity for him to take the bull by the horns and actually act on this. And we have heard nothing from them. We've heard nothing from them. It's bizarre. How many more is going to are we going to see before we see the GAA doing something about this? And again, it comes back. All the time I'm complaining about it is county boards. Individual county boards are not good enough anymore. They're amateurs in a professional era. There too much politics goes on at that level. Like, do Croke Park have any appetite for taking fixtures off them, centralising that, centralising discipline, centralising things? Or are they, do they not want the extra hassle or the extra effort? How much more manpower would that require to actually control them all? Support Duffy tells me before, oh well, they have their own autonomy, we wouldn't be going telling them what to do. I think the time has come where you do need to tell everybody. You're a professionally run business up in Croke Park, and it's run well for the most part. Business wise, it's run well. Like, not say fixtures and stuff is still messy enough. But, like, I mean, at the same time, I've campaigned and kept talking about getting a CEO in every county board. Use the Dublin model. Maximise your marketing, maximise your sponsorship, run these businesses with businessmen with a track record. And not have him kind of saying yeah to the county manager in April for clubs, and just holding a strong line with these people. They don't seem to have any appetite to do that.
Do you know what I think the problem is as well? And it shows why it's so big and why the GAA need to sort of centralise the whole thing. But if you're a player, like, you have sat in a changing room where you've been told you're going to get hit today, and you need to stand up to it, and you've prepared all week for the physical altercations that's going to happen, and you need to be strong, and you need to sort of be ready to be pounced and maybe get involved. And if you're a player and a brawl starts, you have to get involved. Like if you don't get involved in that brawl, like, you'd be sitting in a poker room Friday night, and boys would be able to tell you the four players who didn't get involved, and they're the ones who are ashamed. So in a way, I feel a bit of sympathy for players, and I can see why they're sort of getting defensive about, you know, all this coverage that's happening and giving off about mobile phones, because they have no choice but to get involved. But until the GAA and maybe the county board start making rules to say if there's a brawl, you're thrown out of the championship, then players are going to have to keep getting involved. You have to do it.
They are. And like, Kieran Shannon had a very good example on the basketball. So 40 years ago, it was like the Wild Wild West in basketball. It was similar to this, where there's free-for-alls, and we know their subs are interchangeable, so they're right there on the sideline, because a lot of people are making the argument there's too many on the sideline. And former president Liam O'Neill, who actually in hindsight was an excellent president, like, he brought in the FRC to try and see how the game was going, brought in the black card, whether you like it or not, it was to help or to improve cynical play. He tried to fix the sideline issue, so he put a restriction on how many people could be on the sideline. I don't think clubs are really enforcing that at county final level, but at inter-county level you can only have the manager, you can have a physio, and I think you can have a selector or two sitting down, and then the runner, and that's it. But 40 years ago in the NBA, there was a huge fight between the LA Lakers and the Houston Rockets, and the fella got punched and he fell on the ground and went away to hospital afterwards, and he fractured his jaw, nose, and caused spinal fluid to leak into his brain cavity. So after that punch, the NBA went from being the Wild Wild West to probably the best administered and officiated league in the world. Washington was heavily suspended, sending his career, this is Washington, the fella that hit the other fella, sending his career through a long downward spiral. The league added a third referee on the back of that. So bench players who previously would have dashed in to join Animal League could no longer encroach on the court. Even putting a foot inside the white line merited a suspension. Like, they came down hard on it. So, like, I mean, there was another one then, the malice in the palace between players from the Detroit Pistons and Indiana Pacers and even spectators. So it wasn't unlike Ballyholland and Downpatrick, according to him. So this was 2004 and it led to mass suspensions. The main culprit, Ron Artest, banned for 75 games and 9 players fined an average of $1.2 million each. 5 players were charged with assault, serving a year of community service. 5 spectators were banned for life. No one appealed. That's how you deal with this. Yeah. That stops this. There's precedent in other sports. Like, I mean, that's coming down hard. Would you get involved with a row with those kind of penalties handing up? That will tell you what we'll do. We'll send this report to the police.
Yeah.
What are you going to do then? And you're not getting involved.
And especially if your club were going to get punished, like, because then it's on you. If you turn around and punch someone in front of the referee, everyone thinks you're the idiot. Like, you know, what are you doing? You've just cost us a man in a big game. Like, so if you start punishing everybody, and also, yeah, there's just more serious consequences. I saw there's a guy, Dr. Dermot Grant, that was up at the Ulster Championship launch, the hurling launch there, and up in Stocknield, and he's like 10 years on the British Board of Control, the Boxing Board of Control, and he was sort of just warning people of one punch dangers, like you can kill somebody in one punch. And he was basically saying hitting someone in a GA pitch is much more dangerous than a boxing fight, because in a boxing fight you have to have 2 doctors at all times, you have to be within 1 hour of a hospital and a way of getting there within a maximum of 1 hour, there has to be oxygen and a stretcher at ringside, you know, it's much more regulated. Like, a neurosurgeon on call has to be told there's a fight taking place so he can be ready to go at any time. In a GA match, he's turned around and punched someone and you know, nothing could happen about it. And like, that's taken to the extreme. Like, you could just kill somebody just by reacting to something.
Yeah. So in just to finish up on this, which is shocking as well, is the Camras player who we all saw the video, who put the butt of the hurl into Ross King's face guard and did serious damage to his mouth. He got off. So he appealed it, which I think Camras should be ashamed of themselves for appealing this based on the pictures we saw doing the rounds on WhatsApp. They shouldn't have appealed it. They should have taken the 2-match ban, which wasn't that much considering the damage that was done. The wild pulls were completely out of order. And then Ross King comes running in, and it's completely disingenuous to say Ross King was coming in to do any harm. Ross King wouldn't be like that in any way. He was coming in to maybe give a shoulder or something, didn't deserve what he got. So they appealed it, and amazingly the central or the appeals committee in Laois got rid of the suspension. So they thought there was insignificant or insufficient evidence, even though there was a video. Cameras made the point that he didn't have enough time to react, and that he didn't mean to do the damage that he did. Now, I've spoken to a lot of hurlers, and they know right well what happened in that clip. So what the hearings committee in Laois were basing that decision on, again, sends out the wrong message that you can do what you want. And just because it was in a split second, how the hell, what split second reaction makes you bring your hand down the hurley and stick it up into another fella's face as he's running towards you?
Yeah.
Is your natural reaction if someone's running towards you not to brace yourself, your shoulder, and you know what I mean, for the hit? It's not to stick the butt of the hurl up into his face. So again, that's a really disappointing decision. Again, county board have an autonomy. I don't think they have the expertise. A couple of club delegates, there's 7 on the appeals committee apparently in Laois. Not all 7 would have been deciding on that, because some can have there could be someone from Rathdowney on it, for example, and they couldn't. So it's usually between 3 and 5 people that sit on it. And who are these people making this decision? That's always the question I have.
Well, that's a good question, because what will usually happen is a club like Camras, they would have a proper lawyer in with them, or somebody in the club
there who's
used to law or whatever.
And you've just got 5 delegates with no law experience.
Yeah, and they almost feel intimidated because this guy obviously knows what he's talking about. And like, you know, this idea of he's not that type of player, but like that... we are a type
this
of player.
Fella is this type of player. You saw the two wild pulls and he was suspended from an incident with Mount Leinster Rangers last year. So this isn't a fella who's got an unblemished record on the hurling field. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Which makes this even more disappointing. It should, and they took him off at half time, knowing that he was in, you know what I mean, in Vodder. It's just sneaky. Yeah. It's sneaky carry on.
Well, that's interesting, yeah, that it has those blemishes, because I've sat in an appeals committee and, you know, listening to a lawyer. Noel Mulligan said something similar during the summer at one of the live shows about just how the guy's just talking him up and all the great stuff he does and the charity work and the underage coaching. Yeah. And that's the sort of stuff that, in my appeal, that's all I was hearing. It was nothing to do with the incident.
Yeah.
And then you sort of get a more lenient like suspension then, because
and in fairness, like, I mean, Mulligan, who's a big joke, saying Mulligan said, I didn't have a clue what he was saying.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, like that was funny that night, almost in a shocking way.
Mm.
Like, I mean, he'd no idea that this lawyer was just coming in telling lies about his character and stuff that Mulligan didn't even know was happening.
Jesus, have I done half of this stuff?
And got him off.
Yeah.
There's something not right there. There's just something not right there. All right, we'll move on from that, because Kildare manager has been forced into make some changes to his backroom team. So Enda Murphy and Ronan Sweeney have left the management due to work commitments. And he's brought in Carlo Dwyer, who might know a thing or two from his father about management, so it'll be interesting to see what he can bring to the setup. And Tom Cribben, who's an excellent manager, has been drafted in. So while Sweeney and Murphy will be two losses, I think that the two appointments they've made are pretty good for Keane O'Neill. It'll be interesting to see how Tom Cribben goes back into being a number two after being a number one for so long. We know Keane O'Neill, I'd say he runs a tight enough ship. I'm the big dog, I'm the alpha male here. It's all about me. So, like, I mean, Tom Cribben actually has no ego. So maybe it'll work well. But it was an interesting thing I noticed, and I didn't know about this at all, is that Kildare are out in the Burn Cup on the 8th of December. So because they made the Super 8s, there's a closed season. So they're only allowed back to train on the 8th of December. So, like, I mean, can you get any more GAA than this? So they're basically back the same day that the training ban comes out of action, their O'Byrne Cup versus Offaly.
They've undermined their own competition, the O'Byrne Cup. But for some reason, I think Kildare might be okay with this.
Well, this is a strange one now. So I was checking, they don't have much McKenna Cup information. I presume McKenna Cup's going to have to come back into December as well. So the O'Byrne Cup is being played two rounds, 8th of December and the 15th of December. So the FBD league now is not a league anymore. It's a straight knockout. So that's just been played the first two or three weeks of January. But the O'Byrne Cup has about four or five rounds. So, like, I mean, they're getting two out of the way. It's four rounds. So they're two out of the way in December. And then they're finishing it, I think it's on the 12th of January. The league starts on the 26th of January. So they've had no choice, really, based on the nightmare that happened last year where everything's up on top of each other. So now the season is starting on the 8th of December. So, like, I mean, a part of me thinks it's not a bad idea in that this will be mixed into pre-season training and players will just play games. But again, that's not how managers will see this. They'll see the season starting on December the 8th. So we start on October the 8th. Do you know what I mean? They won't include that in their pre-season training. They'll be getting ready for that. So it's just pushing your pre-season training back a month. And, like, I mean, for those reasons, I just think it's completely, completely wrong. Paul Flynn wrote a really good piece in the Irish Times today, and he's talking about the absence of any meaningful off-season remains a real issue for players. This is something that's come out very strongly in player feedback, and it's an issue that made for a key finding in the recent ERSI report. The ERSI found that over 80% of players feel too much demanded of them as part of the intercounty commitments. We found that almost three quarters of players are not satisfied with the amount of off-season time they get. Some 40% of players we consulted said they didn't get any time off in advance of the 2018 season. So if you didn't get any time off before the 2018 season, which started on the 29th of December, bring it forward 3 weeks there, buddy, because you're going to be starting on the 8th of December this week. So, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, all the stuff Paul Flynn wrote in his piece was great. Like, I mean, and I actually think he'll make a difference to the GPA.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I mean, at the same time, that's what he's saying. And this is what the Leinster Council have just done. So it's just completely kind of in the face of what the GPA want. They want more of a closed season. So the GEA take 3 weeks off that.
or the Leinster Council do, because it's always difficult to blame the GAA. The Leinster Council maybe have autonomy over this at Burn Cup as well. So, like, I mean, there's just so much complication here. And, like, I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, I mean, it makes, like, the obvious thing is just get rid of those competitions. Yeah. The league starts in January. Give them the closed season. Because there's a part of me wonders, like, you have to be honest, the 8th of December, 15th of December, the players that will be playing in those, like, I mean, Leash are back doing trial games now.
Yeah.
They're doing trial games now and we're at the start of October. So, like, I mean, what I would actually do is use those two as trial games nearly. You know, or are you nearly too close to league? The O'Byrne Cup should really be just used as a nothing competition. Because, like, now Leash are getting ready to start in this. So, really, where's the off-season for Leash? Are most of the players, like, I mean, there'll be some players in Leash that'll have been out since the start of July, 1st of August. But you shouldn't really be basing everything on them. Like, they might be glad of starting back in December. Like, what about the Portlaoise players? What about the Dempseys that just lost the county final last week? They're straight back into it. There's no close season for them. There's none.
Like, and there's no solution until there's just a massive and complete overhaul of everything and the fixtures. And because, like, the club players are screwed over with this as well. Like, you know, Paul Flynn plays for Fingallians. They're just out of the Senior B Championship. They lost the semi-final, but they're still playing in the league. They had two league games left after that, and they're still in contention to go up from Division 2 into Division 1, and they could be playing a playoff, which will be November 11th. So if you win, if you're Paul Flynn, you play the playoff on November 11th, then you're going back into the O'Byrne Cup. But if you're a Fingallians player and you get up to Division 1 in November 11th, you're going to have to go straight back into the gym anyway if you're going into Division 1 next year and get yourself in the proper shape. So you'll have no off-season there. And, like, you know, this is like, we talk about this every single year, and there's no way of fixing it until everything is coordinated, all the fixtures. We can just bang our head against the wall, but we will keep talking about this every year. And, like, there's an example of somebody, like, in the GPA writing an amazing piece, and the company that's there to sort of, you know, highlight these issues. And
the
at the same time, like, the GAA is still going on business as usual. The season's starting now at the start of December.
So here's what Paul said at the end of his piece. So he said, earlier this month I presented these detailed findings to the Central Commission's Competitions Control Committee, basically the CCCCC of the GAA, the committee tasked with overseeing changes to the fixture schedule. Specifically, the GPA has put forward the following recommendations. Number one, a task force should be established immediately with representatives from all relevant bodies concerned with fixture planning in the GAA. The group should have an urgent mandate to deliver change quickly. Beautiful, brilliant, right? This is what the CPA have asked for strongly. This is what I've campaigned for since I nearly started in the media. What's the point in? But then, see, he's saying this. So saying it is one thing. What are they doing to make sure this happens? Because John Horan's randomly talking about a two-tier now and changing things based on what he wants. The Super 8s are in for 3 years. Are you actually saying next year we want change? Or when do you want these to happen? And what change? Like, is it too late for these things to get through Congress next? It's in February. So, like, I mean, I must get Paul on the show and say, that sounds brilliant. And it's been said for the last year. The GAA are ignoring this. Mm. The O'Byrne Cup starts on the 8th of December. So when does this happen? And what are the consequences of the GAA not listening to the GPA? Do you know what I mean? Because this sounds great, written down. In advance, here's another one. In advance of any future change to the football championship, there must be a consultation with the GPA so that the player's voice can be heard. Again, 100% agree. Nothing should happen without them having a say, or all stakeholders having a say. Super 8s was pushed through without any consultation. Think about that. Without any consultation. This is dictatorship. Now, I'm not saying I'm against the dictatorship, but I'd like to be the dictator. There should be an urgent review of the closed season policy in the GAA to address the issue of players having no time off. This is coming out on the week that I'm finding out the O'Byrne Cup is starting on the 8th of December. Do you know? Do you get my point?
No, like, absolutely.
I mean, it's just so, I don't think this is Paul's intention, but these are all stuff I'd agree with, and it's common sense stuff.
Yeah.
But this is being written at a time where the actual opposite is happening.
Exactly. Like, you know, it's not his intention, but at the same time, like, the decision was going ahead anyway without consultation. Like, you know, so it didn't matter what he thought.
So unless this is in response to the O'Byrne Cup starting early, and he's saying this can't happen again, because, like, I mean, it just doesn't make sense that the GAA, the Leinster Council, would just fix that. take 3 weeks. So we're trying to condense the season and make it shorter. They've just made the season forward longer by 3 weeks.
Yeah.
After last year, the Pádraig Duffy making it shorter by 3 weeks, they've made it longer in the other direction, right? By 3 weeks. And they've had the they've been allowed to do that without consulting anyone. The Pádraig Duffy's changes at the championship had to go through Congress. You make sense of that to me? That the Leinster Council just could do a solo run on that again and not consult with anyone. So the three. So now the for Leinster clubs, the season is no shorter than it was before Pádraig Duffy brought this brilliant new proposal of the Super 8s.
Yeah, like, you got me. Like, normally at this stage, I'd like to poke you a bit and play devil's advocate just to get you going. But, like, yeah, like, you're right, and I have to agree with you. And, do you know why this idea has come about? Why this is starting in December 8th? It's because of what happened this year. It's completely reactionary. It's because the O'Byrne Cup got played in May, the O'Byrne Cup final, because they had no space when the games got called off in December. And then when games got called off in January, they had no space to sort of put them in.
Yeah.
So now they're giving themselves 2 weeks before the league. So if anything bad happens, they should have enough time between Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, yeah, to get these games played. And that's why. So they've just reacted to something that's just happened a few months ago, and they've overhauled everything just because it happened in January.
Yeah, it's gas. It's gas. So, like, I mean, I would love for all stakeholders to get in a room and trash out a proper season instead of having John Horan saying we want a two-tier. That, again, another thing just going to be pushed in. Wait a minute, fix the whole year and let's move forward after the whole year and stop this 3 years. Let's fix the whole year. Move forward, that all, and this is nothing to do whether we agree with it or not, because we could find fault in whatever they agree.
Yeah.
But once the third level, universities, clubs, representatives, CPA, GPA and GEA sit in a room and agree. Because I trust the CPA, and I trust if the universities get their little space at the start of the year, and I trust the GPA with Flynn with what he's saying. So if they all agree, it doesn't matter if we agree or not. I'd be fairly confident that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Once everybody's happy with it, and stop this John Horan, oh, we'll come with a two-tier, and now he's going to just put his little bit in, and then that's going to push problems somewhere else, and then the Leinster Council might start the O'Byrne Cup in feckin' November, and then what? it's absolutely hilarious. There's some weird carry-on going on in Roscommon, right? So Aidan O'Rourke was the preferred choice. Like this, now, no offence to Aidan O'Rourke, I'm sure he's a really good manager, but he was well down on their list there anyway, so they're finding it really hard to get a job. Don't know why, because I know that they have a pretty generous backer over there, so like I'm sure financially it might be an attractive job for managers, but and they're a Division 1 team, so Aidan O'Rourke was in the mix anyway, so he was their preferred choice at this stage. And maybe he was their number one choice. Maybe this is just names thrown out in the media that it was late in the day his name popped up. So we don't actually know that. So maybe I'm being unfair there. So he was supposed to be announced, and then he asked for 24-hour deferral because he wanted to confirm the name of his coach, which was Carl Lacey, who left the Donegal set up his own county because because there was too much of a commitment or whatever. So then he's going to jump into another county. Wasn't much sense really to that. Would make you wonder, did Carl Lacey leave because of commitments, or did he not like the setup in there? So I mean, you can make your own conclusions about that. But the Roscommon statement on the Roscommon website said, our preferred candidate was Aidan O'Rourke. His team was to consist of Mike McGurn, strength and conditioning, two Roscommon coaches, selectors, and head coach Carl Lacey. The reason for the delay was because of unexpected doubts in relation to Carl's availability as head coach. Unfortunately, this morning, the county chairman received a call from Aidan O'Rourke informing him that he was withdrawing from the process. The Roscommon GA Management Committee are very disappointed at the turn of events, but are fully committed to completing the selection process. However, the committee is concerned at attempts that have been made to influence the outcome of the process over recent days. So Aidan obviously didn't get the backroom team that he wanted, and say getting a backroom team together at the last minute is a bloody frustrating thing, with lads saying, oh, I'm not sure, and you're against the clock on the deadline.
And the O'Byrne Cup starting the FBD
starting in very early January. So like, I mean, he's out. I'd say Aidan obviously wanted the job, but couldn't get the backroom team together in time. Interestingly enough, Shawnee McMahon, who is an experienced defender for Roscommon, he tweeted last week, when are our county board going to wake up? He's replying to a fella called Seamus. When are our county board going to wake up, Seamus? Plenty of people inside our county well good enough for the job. Roscommon need an inside manager. Better for the whole progression of Roscommon football. So don't know if that's the what they were referring to in their statement by saying people are kind of interfering with the process. But Shawnee McMahon is a very brave man, because he was replying to a fella called Seamus who had tweeted about Aidan O'Rourke. So like, if Aidan O'Rourke had got the job, Shawnee McMahon is on very, very thin ice there. Like, I mean, or else maybe he wants to retire, I'm not sure. But like, I mean, it's a very brave tweet based on the fact that Aidan O'Rourke looked like he was getting the job.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one, because like, in Derry you would say, oh, we need an outside manager, you know, someone who's not attached to the politics and they don't have any, you know, club attachments or anything like that. So it's sort of, it's almost like the England manager's job. They need an English manager who's passionate, and then they need a foreign manager who's tactically astute. So it just sort of goes, people want an inside manager and then an outside one.
Outside managers are always that little bit more exotic, right? So you always think someone coming from outside is better than the lads you have inside, where all he is a fella from inside from another county. Yeah. Like, I see managers from Leitrim that I've played under getting paid to manage other county teams. And I'm like, Jesus, like, give me a ring, lads. I'll tell you all about them. No problem. But like, I mean, it's just when it's from another county, immediately it adds to the stock. When just because it's from another county, could be same old club fella who's pretty basic. You know, it's just, it doesn't make sense. But there was a piece in The Independent, Colm Key, saying that this kind of thing of outside managers, it seems to be on the decline big time. So there's 7 outside managers now. So back in 2011, it was 17, I'm pretty sure. So you've Malachy Rourke over Monaghan, you've Paddy Talley over Down, you've Terry Hyland over Leitrim. That news must have slipped by me when I was on holidays, did it? I don't remember even seeing
me
it.
As well.
Terry flew under the radar there. That's a decent enough commute across there. Liam Cairns is Tipperary, John Mahan's Offaly, John Evans is Wicklow, and Colm Key seemed to have forgotten John Sugru, who's over Leash as well. So, like, I mean, the idea that all counties, that fad of getting an outside man, it definitely seems to be in decline. And we all know that if you go for a manager from outside, you're paying him.
Yeah.
There's no one doing that for free. And you can be dressing up the payments in travel expenses, but this man's getting paid. And that's the reality. So maybe county boards are realising financially they just can't afford this anymore, and realising there's very few outside managers have had any success, really. Malachy O'Rourke's the big example. John O'Matney with Galway. There's not an awful lot. Mick O'Dwyer and Paddy O'Shea obviously had some success. Kevin Walsh had a bit of success with Sligo, not really like getting them to a final or something, but
yeah,
they generally don't really do that well compared to homegrown ones.
Yeah, and like, unless it's a name like Malachy O'Rourke, or, you know, what is the point really? Surely you have somebody of equal experience and calibre in your county, and like, and this definitely isn't sort of painting all outside managers the same, but a lot of them would be, you know, going to a certain county to try and get themselves up the ladder a little bit, to give themselves more experience and then boost their CV, and they might not be there for the long haul. Like, you know, whereas an inside manager would actually have his county's wishes, like the best of the wishes at heart, like, you know, and he will do whatever it takes for his county.
Well, I think that's the thing, and I think that an outside manager will come in and he won't give a shit about the club scene. He won't care, because not his county, it's not a big deal to him. He'll come in, and if you're managing another county, right, and you have to remember this, and they'll all say, oh, well, I've got a great connection, and you'll obviously get a connection with the players. You're going there to further your reputation as a manager. You're not there for the good of that county. Like, so you just want a quick, you want a Mourinho, you want to get in, do well, get
your own county's job.
improve your reputation, get some money, and get out.
Mm.
Do you really need that if there's lads in your own county that want it? I don't know. Like, how good are these lads? Because you have to remember, and county boards need to remember this, it's not the manager as such anymore, it's the coach. So you get a fella in your manager that is fella from your own county that's well respected, and get in a Donny Buckley. Bang! That's your kind of dynamic now. You have your manager who can speak from the heart about the county, connect with the players, have the whole kind of health of the county's club scene and everything kind of, you know, at heart as well. Because I saw Brian Cody complaining about the fixtures there recently as well. Like, I mean, Kilkenny County final is later this year than it was before the Super Race, because he used to kind of play the club during the season or whatever. But I think getting a fella from your own county, likes a Cheddar Plunkett there, a great Leash man who used to bring the lads to different landmarks in Leash, teach them the importance of playing with Leash. Why are you doing this? Outside managers can't really do that. But you get in a good coach, a good highly rated coach, if coaching isn't your thing, and you manage the situation, that's the new blueprint.
Tarek O'Brien, Stephen Poacher.
Bang. Turlough O'Brien and Stephen Poacher on paper is the perfect combination. If Stephen Poacher was not like what Stephen Poacher is like. Before we finish up, another good fundraiser in Mead for Sean Cox, Conan. So this Friday night in the Knightsbrook Hotel in Trim at 7 o'clock, they're going to have a Q&A session. So it's 30 years on since Mead beat Cork in the All-Ireland final. So maybe you're a little bit young to remember this. So Mead beat Cork in 1988, and then they actually beat them. Oh, that was the second year. They beat them in 87, 88, then Cork won it in 89. But there was a huge rivalry built up in those 2 years, almost a hatred, an absolute outright hatred. So Mead beat them the 2 years in a row in that. And they're going to have a Q&A based on the players involved in those matches. So Mead are going to be represented by Sean Boylan, Colm O'Rourke, Jerry McEntee, three good ones to start off with, Joe Castles, Martin O'Connell, Colm Boylan, and David Beggy. And you have former Cork manager legend Billy Morgan and Dinny Allen from the Cork side. So this is a Q&A session in the Knightsbrook Hotel in Trim. Tickets cost €10 and all the money will go towards Sean Cox. So the great thing about the GAA community is they're all rallying around Sean Cox, who obviously is involved with the Dunboyne Club, and credit to anyone involved in all these fundraisers for him. Right, up next we're going to talk to Peter Atchison.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat and have a shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in the air. I don't know, it was pure luck, no, in fairness. Pure luck. It's fucking bullshit, as you've seen yourselves.
All right, so the Tipperary County Final is on Sunday and Peter Atchison is making the longer than usual commute from Dubai to play with Mile Rovers, and he joins us on the line now. Peter, how's it going?
Good, Con, thanks. Yourself?
Very good, very good. Come here, an important question to start off with. What's the weather like over there?
We're hitting about 36 or 37 degrees at the moment, so it's cooling down after the summer.
Holy, holy.
Yeah, I was up at the 48, 47 there for June and July. So, coming into a nice season now, so going down to about 30 or 31 over the next week or two. So, it's a nice time of the year now, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. Jeez, compared to 48, anything is nice.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mentioned obviously of the county final on Sunday. You're in Dubai right now. What's going to happen between now and Sunday to get you back, get a training session under your belt, or maybe a couple? What's your routine? What are your plans?
Yeah, I'll finish up work here now in the next hour or two. I'll relax tonight and I'm flying at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning then. So I'll be leaving my apartment about maybe 4 a.m. tomorrow. I get into Dublin then at lunchtime, maybe 12:30. And I'm back in Clonmel by 2:30, which isn't too bad.
Okay.
Tomorrow afternoon. And then we have club training. I'm not sure what time it's on, maybe 8 p.m. Friday night. Just kick around, you know, yourselves 2 days before the game. And then the match is on Sunday at 3 or 4 o'clock.
Right, okay. So, like, I mean, you're only 3 hours ahead in Dubai, so you're not going to be too much jet lag, but still the 4 a.m. getting up, it's going to take you till Saturday evening, I suppose, to get back feeling 100%.
Yeah, look, I did it the last two trips home and I actually felt grand after the flight. I could actually fly tonight if I wanted to, but I feel that if I leave tomorrow morning, that there won't be really any jet lag. I'll have a nice sleep tonight, and like you said, it's only 3 hours time difference, so I think if I flew during the night and I didn't get proper sleep on the flight, it could be a little bit different. So I think the morning flight's better for me. Get in at lunchtime, I get a proper sleep to my own bed back home on Friday night. So it shouldn't be any issue at all, to be honest.
Yeah, okay. It's a fair old commute. So what's your plans for after the game then? How many days are you going to take off afterwards?
Yeah, so I'm after eating into my annual leave a big time at the moment, as you can imagine. But the bosses are sounding off, so I'm flying back on Tuesday at lunchtime, so I'll have Sunday night and Monday then to either drink my sorrows or celebrate. So,
right, okay.
Yeah, there'll be a bit of crack either way.
It can be hard enough getting time off for county finals and for inter-county football at home in Ireland if your boss isn't really into GAA. You're probably a little bit struggling a little bit more out in Dubai.
Yeah, the two lads that actually own the company are Carlo and Kerry men, so and they're GAA men, so they were they were happy enough for it, to be honest. I'm using my annual leave, so as long as it's like extra days, but they'd be more than generous, to be honest. So I'd say they didn't think I'd be flying over and back as much as I am, but look, that's because we're doing so well, and hopefully if we get this win on Sunday, it'll be more than worth it, to be honest.
Yeah, so how did you get roped into all this travelling anyways? I heard you went home for a holiday and you made the mistake of dropping up to club training, and then it was like the spider's web, you were caught.
Yeah, my first mistake probably was our selector there was David Conway. I was a soldier with him. He's only maybe 33 or 34 years of age. And he was over on a holiday, so he hit me up there, and we went to a pool party back in February. And sure, a few drinks were had, and we were chatting away. And he mentioned, would I come back for the last semi-final or final maybe? And I said, yeah, I would. And then back in August, I was over at training. I went up to meet the lads, and Fitzy, now Fitz, our manager, came up to me, approached me, and said, would I be interested? And it graduated from there on, and I'm happy enough I did it now, but it has been a big ordeal, but more than worth it.
Yeah, it's more than worth it, I suppose, that you got back into the final and you were unexpected to beat Clonmel Commercials in the semi-final. It was a last-minute goal. You were really outsiders for that one. They're the big team, obviously, Munster champions a couple of years ago. So it really is all worthwhile now. But you came back for the last group game, quarter-final, semi-final. You probably weren't expecting to be back in a final, or is that fair? Is that unfair to say?
Look, yeah, I suppose when we got Commercials in the semi-final, that was the big one, the tough draw. But I expected to be there, and to be honest, the team we have, even if I wasn't there, I would expect them to be challenging and maybe winning anyway. So we still have a lot of 29, 30 year olds that would have played county football, and we have plenty of young lads coming through also. So the team is there, but we've lost three or four finals over the last 8 or 9 years by yeah. 1 point or 2 points. So we've been touch and go for the last 9 years, but there has been a bit of a drought there. 2009 is our last one, so this will be massive for the club. But at the same time, I think they haven't won since 2005, maybe. So I'm sure they're as hungry as we are. So it's going to be a big game, I'd say.
Yeah. So what have you been doing out in Dubai to keep fit? Like, I mean, you're training with a team out there. You can pronounce it, Jumeriah Gales.
Close enough.
You say it. I have problems pronouncing even.
Jumeirah.
Okay. I've trouble pronouncing even Irish clubs. Never mind one from out in Dubai. But like, I mean, you're back in your pre-season. But what's it like even training out there? Like, I mean, 38 degrees during the day. It must be really difficult.
Yeah, I saw you were getting a bit of hassle for the pronunciation during the week after the hurling championship. Yeah, no, there's Tamara Gales, they started a club maybe 3 years ago. They started junior as back home. You have to start junior and work your way up. So they won the junior 3 years ago, and then the year I came out, they were intermediate, and we won that year also. And then we're senior. We came second in the league last year, and we're winning at the moment, so hopefully we can push on. But we train 3 times a week, and there's 4 tournaments in the year, then one every month, and then I have soccer once or twice a week also. So to be honest, I'm probably playing more sport out here than I ever did, because you can't really play soccer back home when you're playing for Tip. But the intensity wouldn't be as high as county training, of course, but the training is very good, and the fact that it's in 35 or 34 degree heat, I'm sure that's only good for your fitness. So the fitness isn't the issue. It's just the football wise was a little bit different when I came back first. First of all, it was pissing rain, which didn't help. I hadn't seen rain in about 2 years. And it's 60 minutes rather than 14 minutes games a week out here. So it's a little bit different, high intensity out here. But after first game, I think I got back into track of it. And I think I should be okay fitness-wise. So look, we'll find out Sunday.
Yeah, and so it's 9-a-side out there. So, like, I mean, how do you line up? 4 backs, 1 midfielder and 4 forwards. Is that it?
Yeah, it's basically like the sevens is the best way to describe it. It's on a rugby pitch, and it's a fly keeper kind that we usually play 3-2-3 then. But you can imagine that the 2 midfielders are sitting back as backs for when we're defending, and then everybody attacks then. It's a great sport to play, to be honest. It's just all out attack. And from listening to you and Conan back home, it doesn't sound like the football's going too well on the eye back in Ireland. So yeah, it's a nice relief. It's an enjoyable game to play.
Yeah, but is there a tendency for it to be a bit like basketball, where everybody moves back the court together, then everybody moves up the court together? Is that how it works out, or people hold their positions?
There is a bit. Maybe your four stays up all the time, and maybe one of your other 4 stays up. But funny you say that, actually, they changed the rules last year that if you bring it into the opposition's half, you can't come back again now.
Right.
So it's even more attack minded now. So it's it's full on attack. You might keep the ball for maybe 90 seconds, but after that then it's a score and you're straight back again. So it's all goals, fairness.
Jeez, how progressive.
There's a lot of tactics involved too.
Yeah, how progressive are they out in Dubai? If only we could get the same here. Like, I mean, what were the grassroots up in arms with this new rule change out in Dubai?
Yeah, I think two lads just went into a room and decided you didn't have to go through the thousands of people and bickering back home. So I think just two or three lads probably had some sort of AGM and decided that it was a good call, and it was a good call, in fairness.
Well, this is what I want back here, Peter. I want a dictatorship. I want to go into a room with someone else, come up with new rules and just come back, and this is the new rules. That's it. Dictatorship is what should work. It's too democratic here with Congress and everyone voting on stuff. It's madness.
With you in charge, of course, yeah.
Oh, of course. I'm the dictator. It's my idea.
Conor can talk, but he doesn't get the responsibility of making a call.
Well, come here. You mentioned soccer that you're playing as well. So, like, I mean, you're away most evenings doing stuff. You played soccer to a pretty high level at school's international level. You played against Chris Smalling, I believe.
Yeah, I would have. We went to rugby school, so there was no GAA there. So I think GAA might have been entered now since I left. But yeah, there was no GAA there. Conor Sweeney was actually in the same school and a few other lads in the tip team.
Oh, yeah.
So it was either rugby or soccer. I played rugby till junior cup, but then I was playing a lot of football and hurling minor, so I couldn't commit to the rugby. And I just went down to soccer training one day to do something during the day. And I kind of progressed from there. And luckily enough, yeah, I ended up being on the Irish schools team, and we won the Irish and UK tournament. So we're playing against Smalling there in the Stadium of Light in the last game. We bet them 1-0. So it was a great experience, in fairness. And I did a bit for Clonmel Town back home then on the off-season for the GAA, but that would only be for maybe a month or two.
Yeah.
So since I got out here, I've been able to play a good bit more. I still miss a few games due to the GAA, but not as much, so it's great to get it in fairness.
Yeah, no, I saw you tweeted, it wasn't long after you got out. Everybody knows, obviously, you left for Dubai not long after the All-Ireland semi-final against Mayo, and you tweeted, "Birthday on the beach in Dubai. I love the GAA and playing GAA, but it can blind you to life. You have to live too." Like, do you still think that? You know, you're out of that routine of football dominating your thought process. Do you feel a bit of a release? Like, I mean, we love it, but at the same time, it does dominate your thought process.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say I had a few beers in me when I made that tweet, I'd say. But yeah, no, definitely. I do believe that, to be honest. Look, it's great, and I would encourage every young fella to play GAA at whatever centre they want. But it's different for everybody else. Each person is different. But when you're playing for people or teams like maybe Kerry or Dublin, it's probably a little bit more worth it because you have that silverware and you're getting the titles. But it's not easy playing with lower down teams. Even though we had a lot of quality over the years, we didn't really win anything at senior level. So our run in 2016 was brilliant, and I'll never forget it. But at the same time, you're missing out on stuff, everyday life, that you'll never get back. So it's a tough one, everybody.
It must have been difficult to leave after the year you had, though, you know, losing an All-Ireland semi-final. Of all years to have to leave after, it was the best one, obviously, that you'd ever played in. You were nominated for an All-Star. Like, was there second thoughts going through your mind? I know your girlfriend Roisin has family out there, so I'd say the decision wasn't in your hands.
Yeah, no, we'd made the decision actually nearly 12 months before that. But I sat down with Liam Kearns then, and we kind of had a chat. And a few other people, Joe Hennigan and a few other guys, good footballing men and tip. And they just asked for one more year. So I told them I would give them one more year. And I'm glad I did now. It was a great way to leave. But after it was done, all the plans had been made, and there was all going back. So to be honest, it was a great way to leave. But like you said, it is hard to leave on that note after getting to a semi-final. But no, there's no regrets there now, so I was happy enough to leave that way.
I saw you were quoted as well saying the lifestyle is great out in Dubai. Like, I mean, you're almost settled out there that you're not going to come home, kind of from reading what you've been saying. Give us an idea of the lifestyle out there, because I kind of have it in my head of Dubai. You have to stay in certain areas and you can't go, you know, the women obviously have to cover up if they're going into some of the local villages. I'm not sure if I would really like that, but give us an idea. I've never been to Dubai.
Yeah, no, it's actually totally different from what everybody thinks. So I think you always kind of have the Middle East, Saudi Arabia kind of thought in your heads, but Dubai is more Western than you can nearly say New York, like at this stage. Women can wear whatever they want, really, as long as you're not doing anything outrageous, you won't get in trouble. The social scene is very good. The lifestyle is brilliant. There's no compounds or anything like that. You can go to any nightclubs or any bars, whatever you want, basically. As long as you aren't falling on the street causing trouble, there'll be no issues. I suppose same as being in Dublin, basically.
Yeah.
As long as you're not acting there, you just be grand. No, I'd advise a holiday here for anybody. It's more Western than everybody thinks, so it's a great place to live, and we're going to be here for the foreseeable future, I'd say.
Right, so like, I mean, somebody had said to me that you have to stay inside all hotel complexes. Is that not the case, or?
No, not at all, no. So technically a bar has to be owned by a hotel. It's just it's a legal thing by the government so that people don't just start opening pubs all over Dubai. But right. Like there's pubs everywhere. You go outside, you walk to the next pub, or you get a taxi down, depending on the heat. No, it's nowhere near as strict as anybody thinks. It's not strict at all, to be honest.
Right, okay.
You should come out and have a look at it.
Yeah, no, I should. And there's loads of Irish out there anyways. You've made loads of friends. Like, I mean, you're obviously in with the football and the soccer team, so the social scene is good out there and lots of Irish out there.
Yeah, massive, yeah. Like I said, our club only started maybe 3 years ago, and we have five, if not six, senior teams now, or men's teams. I think they have nine ladies' teams. And then our soccer club has eight or nine teams also. So you can imagine the pick we have there. So, and we've Abu Dhabi, which is only an hour away too, and they have maybe seven, eight teams also. So, the amount of Irish people out here is outrageous. I think it's something like 10,000 people Irish out here, so.
Right.
It's kind of like the new New York or new America, so I'd say it'll keep growing.
Yeah, exactly. And Kamir, how do you handle, before I leave you go, how do you handle the 48 degree heat then? Like you mentioned, you'd have to get a taxi from a bar to a bar, because it would, instead in Ireland, it's because it's raining. Over there, it's because it's just too hot to be walking around.
Yeah. Just about the same. It's like the winter back home, you just don't go outside. So it's about six to 8 weeks. They've AC everywhere though, thank God. So
right.
You just don't go outside, basically. It's like winter back home. Just don't go outside. You have the AC everywhere. I wouldn't be recommending the holiday in June and July out here. wait to October to April maybe.
Yeah, exactly. No, come here. So you've had Finnan next, and you mentioned they were in a final last. Their manager is John Evans, a man you know absolutely plenty about. I don't know where he gets the time in his life to be involved with as many teams as he is. But you're slight favourites going into this one. You're obviously underdogs in the semi-final. So, like, you last won it in 2009. So that it probably is a long time in recent history for Mile Rovers to be going without one.
Yeah, it is. John was with me my first three, maybe 4 years with Tips. So John's brilliant for a team to get them to rally around the team and get everything for that team, all the support they need, etc., etc. Look, in this day and age, every GA club is probably struggling with immigration and people playing other sports. So I'd say John got all those lads to buy back into the club, and they have some serious players. They have three or four lads on the county team, on the panel, and then they have two or three on the 21 panel. So they have a strong, very strong core, and some strong young fellas coming through also. So they'll be very hungry. I think they bet us in 2015 in the South Championship. We made a bet them since then, but there won't be much between the teams. So look, it'll all be on the day. I think it's supposed to be a sunny day on Sunday, so hopefully it'll be a good game of football, hopefully.
Yeah, listen, fingers crossed. Come here, Peter, thanks very much for taking the call, and best of luck on Sunday.
Yeah, nice one, Colin. Take it easy, man. Yeah, we do, we have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well, so we have a couple of filly donkeys, so I brought them down, and so we actually sold them to, I think we had four donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford, so we did. So there's the piebald donkey from there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
You see them on the beaches, and so you can actually one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them, because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your bonuses, your grants. A donkey in Eden, a donkey in Eden Palace.
Right, county final time, Conan. And Saturday night, we have two games. We have one hurling, one football. We have Wicklow Senior Football Championship final replay. So God help these. This is at 3 o'clock in the day, obviously to give them that little bit more recovery time for playing road the next day in Leinster Club. So Rathnew are 8-11 favourites according to Paddy Power. St Patrick's are 7-5 outsiders. It was a draw the last time. Local derby, we talked enough about that. So that's going to be a great game. There's also a Limerick hurling county final on Saturday night. So that's between Na Piarsaigh and Doon. So Na Piarsaigh are favourites for this one. I'm pretty sure we all know about Na Piarsaigh. They won it in 2011, they won it in 2013, they won it in 2015, and they won it in 2017. So they're a year on, year off man. So now they're back in it in 2018, so they're going to retain it for the first time. So they're 3-10 favourites, and Doon are 3-1 outsiders. Doon have never won it in their history, and they have Pat Ryan, they've Darrell Donovan, they've Richie English, and they've Barry Murphy. So there's a huge, huge kind of clash there between a lot of inter-county stars and both teams, and it's going to be a great one. And interestingly enough, you can watch this one, Conan, at 7:30 on Air Sport.
Oh,
they're back!
They're back!
What's after happening here?
They just
went underground, couldn't get a word out of them, and now they've just reappeared. Yeah. So we'll have to see who's involved. And what they're going to do for the rest of the championship. They did cover a few Limerick. They focused a lot on Limerick. They had some of the earlier rounds in Limerick, so they're back into the mix. Sunday then, we have the Clare football final. That's between Ennis Tymon and Milltown Malbay. St. Joseph's Milltown Malbay. That's in Cusick Park, obviously. Ennis Tymon last won it in 1943. Anyone's ever gone to Lahinch will go through Ennis Tymon. It's a tiny little town. There's a really awkward bridge, left-hand turn going towards Lahinch. So Ennis Tymon, that's the only reason I know it. Don't know really too much about them, but they last won it in 1943. St. Joseph's last won it in 2015, and they've won it 13 times. So they're one of the bigger clubs in Clare. So we're rooting for Ennis Tymon in this one, Conan. That's all you need to know about that. Cork Senior Football Championship final, St. Finbar's versus Dulhallow. Dulhallow beat Castlehaven after three games in the semi-final. This is pretty close. This is in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and St. Finbar's are 5-6. Obviously one of the big clubs in Cork, but they haven't won it since 1985. The great Jimmy Barry Murphy played for them, and they lost the final last year after a replay to Nemo. So they've lost seven finals since the last one in 1985. So St. Finbar's want to get the finger out here and win this. Dulhallow obviously have Aidan Walsh, Donnick O'Connor, and they're an area team. Dulhallow last won it in 1991, won it in 1990 as well. So they won two, 1990-91. Who did they beat in the final in both those games?
Nemo Rangers.
St. Finbar's. So there you go. Psychological battle won here straight away for Dulhallow. Actually, Dulhallow are guaranteed to win this. Ian McGuire, Michael Shields, St. Finbar's have. So
not as romantic when it's an area team, is it?
No, it's not. And even Colm Spillane, kind of when they went back, they ended up going back to Seamus Harnady's club because he was the captain and he kind of dictated it. But it could go to 18 clubs. Like area teams, how did they manage the celebrations? Just there's a lot of planning need to go in, and there's a lot of kind of politics. Who gets this clubhouse? Who gets the team back?
And we talked about Monday, you're not growing up with these boys, you know?
Well, you're definitely not growing up with these boys. Absolutely. You're growing up pulling across these fellas in hurling. So Paddy Power have St. Finbar's 5-6 favourites, Dulhallow 13-10. Galway Senior Football Championship Final, Cora Finn versus Mount Bellew Moylock. That's in Pearce Stadium. Cora Finn are 1-7, no surprises there. The Mount Bellew are 5-1. So this is a repeat of the 2015 and 17 finals and the 2009 final. So Cora Finn beat them in 15 and 17 by 10 points. So this year, that's why they're at 1-7, obviously. Mount Bellew Moylock brought them to a replay in 2009, but to be pretty different teams now in 2018 than 2009. Cora Finn are going for 6 in a row, as we know. Mount Bellew Moylock have Michael Daly, obviously brilliant player for Galway, centre forward, young player. But Mount Bellew Moylock manager Michael Donnellan, not to be confused with the absolute legend from Galway, he is from Cora Finn and he's managing them. So he's trying to get he won an All-Ireland in 1998 with Cora Finn, and now he's managing Mount Bellew Moylock. Try and cause a shock.
Yeah, it's strange odds. 1-7 and then 5-1. It's not normally like that.
Don't know how it works. We'll have to get
the bookies are hazing their bets here. That's what's happening. That's how it works.
Well, see, it's not the bookies, it's Paddy Power.
Paddy Power.
It's one specific bookie.
I don't know, kinda. Slag the sponsor of the show.
Oh yeah, when we're saying something negative, it's the bookie.
The bookies.
All right, positive is Paddy Power. Right, well, you're one step ahead of me there. So Kerry finals on this weekend as well. Be looking forward to this game. It's not on television, unfortunately, I don't think. Dr. Crokes versus Dingle. Dr. Crokes are 3-10, Dingle are 3-1. Dingle have won the title 6 times: 1938, 1940, 41, 43, 44, 48. They were the team to beat in the 40s. And then they've just disappeared. They've just vanished away until this really good new team has come along. Bit of a harder edge to them this year, as proven not by the selector, but there was a lot of niggling in the East Kerry game, like in both games. And this is put down to the harder edge Dingle are bringing to it this year. So, and by all accounts, they go route one to Paul Geaney with good route one ball rather than old crappy ball. We know how good he is in the air. So they'll definitely get some chances against Crokes, but whether they can keep the Crokes forward line under control is another story. So, like, I mean, their forward line is Michael Burns, Gavin O'Shea, Brian Looney, David Shaw, Kieran O'Leary and Tony Brosnan. That was for the Cairns O'Rattley game. So on the bench is Colin Cooper, who just came back from missing the previous game. I think he was sick or slightly injured. So Colin Cooper comes back for his club and doesn't get back onto the starting team. That's outrageous. That's outrageous. Like, I mean, but he's not getting back on it to actually prove a point. He's getting back on it because young David Shaw is a machine, Tony Brosnan's a machine, Kieran O'Leary can't be dropped. So Gooch is almost like, Gooch, you just sit out here, maybe. I'm not sure. Because, like, I mean, it's hard to know. Like, I mean, he has to get on ahead of David Shaw. Ah, he should get on ahead
Jesus,
of David
like,
Shaw.
What are we talking about? Yeah. Like, okay. It's a sad day for football when Jim McConnelly and Colin Cooper on the bench for their clubs.
Yeah, but this is not a normal club forward line now.
No,
like
when
they won the All-Ireland 2 years ago, Michael Burns wasn't even on the team.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's ridiculous how they do it. Like, I mean, Gavin O'Shea is a good player, but he's the manager's son. So you wonder whether he's feeling a little bit of pressure, and not because he's not a really, really good player. It's when you're, and I have experienced this at underage level with my father, when you're the manager's son and you have a bad game and there's someone else good on the line,
yeah,
there's a pressure there that you feel that nobody else can understand unless you've been in that situation.
You have to be better as well. Like, you know, if you're playing good, it's not enough because all the other parents whose kids aren't playing think that you're only playing because you're the manager's son. So you have to play better
now
than everybody else.
I do have to say, at under 14 level, you know the way you have two, a lot of the time you have 2 years at under 14, 2 years under 16. I played 2 years minor, then I played 5 under 21. I started getting good around 17, 18. But at my first year under 14, I'd say my father was doing a favour or two for me at wing back for Portly. Like, I was not brilliant. I don't remember anyone specifically being on the sideline that should have been on it, but I remember thinking, the father might be doing me a bit of a favour here getting me on this team. But then my second year I was midfield and I deserved to be on it. But then from under 16 onwards I didn't have those issues. But under 14 level, thanks Dad, basically. You did me a favour there. London final replay. This Fulham Irish Tyrconnell Gales. The betting here with Paddy Power is 11-10, 10-11. It's almost even money. This is a repeat of last year's final. Owen Mulligan came off the bench to earn a draw for Fulham Irish in the first game. So he came on with 20 minutes to go. Tyrconnell Gales are the big club in London, the 15 championship victories. Muggsy actually got the winning free in the final last year, came on this year and gets the drawn free. David Givney is at full forward for Fulham Irish. You might have wondered where David Givney had gone.
Oh, Mulligan's on the bench as well.
Oh, Mulligan's on the bench. This is outrageous. Whatever happened to the old stock 35, 36, 37 year old leading the line with club level? Like, I mean, this youth. Maybe managers are going down inter-county level and trying to be like Jim Gavin. No one's guaranteed their place. Again, the hierarchy's gone, Colin. The script has been ripped up. That's 7 years I was out of the game. It's all changed.
Yeah, I know you want rule changes and everything. That's how old you've gotten.
So Tipperary, we know all about this. This is Art Finnan 5-2, Mile Rovers 2-5. So like Peter was saying, Art Finnan last won it in 05, Mile Rovers 09. My Rovers have Peter Atchison, Alan Campbell, Stephen Quirk, Liam Boland, and it's Declan Brown's club. The Water Senior Football Championship final is between Kilrosanti and the Nair. I've never heard of Kilrosanti before. They're 6-4 outsiders, the Nair 8-11. The great thing about this Waterford Championship final is that the winners are going to be in the Munster Club. Well done, Waterford. A round of applause for the Waterford County Board. Hurling now, we've already mentioned the Pearsig. Kilkenny Senior Hurling Championship Final is interesting. It's Bennett's Bridge versus Ballyhale Shamrocks. So only 4 years ago, Bennett's Bridge were a junior club in Kilkenny, so they're really on the rise. They haven't won the senior title since 1971. They beat the 2013-2015 champions Clara in the semi-final. So Bennett's Bridge have a proud tradition. They've 12 Kilkenny senior titles to the name, but it's more than 40 years, obviously, since they've won it. They have Rob Lennon, Enda Morrissey, Liam Blanchfield were on the Kilkenny panel, and Jason Clear, Sean Morrissey have been involved at underage level as well. So they're an upcoming team who've won their way. They won the Junior All-Ireland, then won the Intermediate All-Ireland, then survived it in their first year senior. They survived, and now this year they've pushed all the way to a county final. So it's been a huge rise from junior up to senior county final for Bennett's Bridge. I'm rooting for them, even though I'm a huge Ballyhale Shamrocks fan. I'm a big Ballyhale. They pelted me with Slitters and GA Jackass. I love those guys. Yeah. I love those guys. But listen, I'm an underdog man here, and we're hoping for Bennett's Bridge maybe to just have the fairy tale of winning a senior.
Yeah, they're too much Ballyhale, too much of a powerhouse here. Like Henry Shefflin managing them.
He's the manager.
TJ Reid running around strutting his stuff. Like we're going for a team who were junior 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And like you can't fluke getting a senior final in Kilkenny. You have five group games.
Yeah.
And then you have quarterfinal and semifinal. So after seven games, the best two teams are going to be in the final.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're there now is unreal.
They win they have a brilliant championship, all right, Kilkenny. So you're guaranteed four group games and then like seven to win it, and everyone gets four group games. You can't get any better than that. But Brian Cody likes mixing it in as the season goes on. I wouldn't be a fan of that, but I can see where Brian Cody is absolutely coming from. Dublin hurling final replays, Ballyboden, St. Enda's. This is even money. Impossible to separate these two teams. And this was an absolute classic. So if you're anywhere near Parnell Park at 3:30 on Sunday, go into that one. Westmead hurling final is Clonkill versus Raharney. That's in Cusick Park. And this is very close in the betting, according to Paddy Power. 6-5, Clonkill versus Raharney 5-6. Antrim Senior Hurling Championship Final. This is the big one, really, isn't it? In Antrim, Cushendall versus Lochale Shamrocks. That's in Ballycastle at 3:00, and it's 5-4, 4-5 in the betting. So that's a really big one, and you can be promised, guaranteed, that that'll be more entertaining than the football final, which finished up 5-4. We're pretty sure it will.
Yeah.
We're pretty sure it will. Provincial championships are kind of a side thing now, because county finals are always supersede the early rounds of the provincial championship. But one thing I do say about the provincial championship starting, this is my I've said this on the last three or four podcasts, this is my favourite time of the year. So you have county finals coming in every county, and if anyone's like me, they're checking every county to see who's won it, have they won it, every even researching these things, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like to know who, like who's, is this their first ever one? Jesus, wouldn't it be great if they won it?
Yeah.
Don't know if I'm like overly enthusiastic about it. Then you're looking around in Leinster, and this is because I obviously won county titles at Portlaoise, so first hand experience going, what's the Leinster club draw? Who's coming out of Dublin? Who's coming out of Kildare? Who's coming out of Westmead? You're massively interested. So now the Leinster club first round is pretty much a preliminary round. It's before the quarter finals. So Shell Maliers of Wexford, I finally know how to pronounce that, they play Dunboyne and Meath. So there's just something really cool about Wexford versus Meath champions, yeah, going head to head. That's in Wexford Park at 1:30 on Sunday. Shell Maliers are 11-2 outsiders, Dunboyne 1-8 favourites. Wexford, if we're being honest, Wexford club football has made no impression in Leinster club at all, and that betting kind of reflects that. Mullingar Shamrocks, this is a big one for Portlaoise fans because they play the winners the following week. Mullingar Shamrocks 3-1, Moorfield 1-3. That's in Cusick Park at 1:30. So Moorfield beat St. Lomans in the final last year in one of the most bizarre games you'll ever see.
Yeah.
So Mullingar Shamrocks beat St. Lomans in the Mullingar Derby, and now they're 3-1 outsiders at home versus Lomans, or versus Moorfield. I know I bet against Moorfield against the tie in the final and got that wrong, but if you were a betting man, you'd give Mullingar Shamrocks. Now, having seen Connor Sketch's Instagram and everything about the celebrations in Mullingar Shamrocks, maybe this is what Paddy Powers is sneaky enough with this kind of thing. And Mullingar Shamrocks, are they just happy with the county title? And they've celebrated all week, because we know Moorfield won't have celebrated all week, because they're at the stage now where, yeah, county title is a stepping stone for them. And that makes it's a huge dynamic in that. Like, I mean, you get drawn against a club who's won it for the first time. You would be saying to each other in training, as these lads will be on the beer all week, league.
Yeah.
Like, they'll have 10, 15 minutes trying to hit you hard, but you weather that. And we should, you know what I mean? Your fitness will see you through because they've been drinking all week. But, like, I mean, that's definitely a factor there, maybe why they're 3-1 outsiders at home. Rathnewer St. Patrick's versus Road. That is on in Ockram. So at least the winners of St. Patrick's will have a home game. And then you have Munster Club hurling Ballygunner versus Middleton. Middleton were beaten in the Cork County Final. But they obviously played an area club, Imokilly, and they represent Cork after losing. So I don't know where their heads would be at. So the betting reflects that. Ballygunner are 1-5. Lost the final of the Munster Club last year to na Piarsaigh after playing really well against them. So they're Middleton are 4-1 outsiders. And in the Ulster Club semi-final, hurling Slocknail are 1-7 to beat Ballycran of Down, and that's in Corrigan Park at 2:30. And that's it, Conan. So there's loads of games this weekend. Not sure which one you'll be paying most attention. You'll be watching Air Sport, I'm sure. You're being the hurling aficionado. Maybe you won't. do we know who's on the TV on Sunday? I didn't actually check that. Usually we do.
We do. I know on Monday it's two live games. There's one on Sunday, but then the Monday one is the Dublin game.
The Dublin game. I actually read who the games were on Sunday, but I'm not going to keep humming and hawing about it here. Listen, we can't be just spoon feeding the information. Use the Google here and check it out yourselves. Right, that's all we've time for. Thanks to everyone for watching on YouTube. There are some of you watching on YouTube, and we really appreciate that as well. And we'll talk to you on Monday. We're back on the bank holiday Monday because there's so many games this weekend. We're not going to leave it till Tuesday, so we'll talk to you Monday. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.